Blog Talk Radio.
Came to an end last week, so I actually got in my last grades an hour ago, when you have six classes, one side law, three are law, three are network technology, and you have approximately 30 students in each class. On the law side, you have to read all the essays and look for those misspellings, what have you. And on the tech side, you have to see if they actually answered the right question the right way or they spelled it the right way, because if it's spelled wrong, it's wrong. You know, hey, there can't be no leeway. You got to give it to them hard. So there has been, I think my brother Pata out in Boston put it on his Facebook that he's finished grading, so he knows what it feels like. So all you teachers out there, trust me, you're not alone. So dealing with that, we had a great casting a little while ago for Once Upon a Time in the Congo. I actually sent out a rough cut to a few people in the mix, get their flow, let them know what's going on. We have Brenda Lopez will be playing the role of Geneva, still looking to fill the role of Hatari Shinji. Was it Shingi? Yes, Shinji. So everything's coming by. We have a great director, and it's Jennifer Alavez. Saw her reel. She's doing some good stuff. Her shot list is unreal. It's like a detailed mission flight plan for NASA. So she has some great ideas. And she, in fact, she even saw her auditions like it was a film, two camera over the shoulder. I mean, literally, it was like a surveillance footage at one point. So she's on board. So everything's flowing. Howard's doing a great job in reference to the producing side. So I think the next thing we have to do is we have to locate Hatari. It's been a very difficult struggle, casting difficult struggle. I'm just one of those adventures today, right? But it's been a challenge filling that role. But I have a couple of people in mind who I think will definitely bring it. Gotta see what their schedule looks like so we can get them into the mix. So that's definitely going to flow. I feel we'll be shooting this scene. Probably everything's contingent when they do the operation, because it's supposed to be a 6-week recovery time where I can't use my arm. So, you know, everybody's patiently waiting. So we're just assembling the forces there. We also have a Kanima Parkinson Jones in the mix as Providence in our La Femme film we're working on. Ironically, she has her own piece, the solo piece, and she makes a character appearance or a crossover appearance, cameo appearance in a Neo song. So that's good. Kanima's from Sierra Leone, spent some time in Mozambique, speaks Portuguese, French. Creole from her country, and I think I'm missing a language, probably German. Actually, I think she has a rudimentary understanding of German. So that's good. Now we're looking at who's going to do Lucian. I have a good idea. Claudia, what's going on? I'm going to call her today. So Claudia, I'm on the air now. What's going on, girl? What's the word? So otherwise, everything's flowing, you know. Missing the family, had a great Father's Day, hung out with Dar. Checked out Super 8. Check out Super 8, people. It's a great film for you filmmakers out there. It actually rekindles the feelings I had back in the 70s, early 80s when I really had my interest peaked in reference to producing. So, you know, check that out, Super 8. You might want to see Green Lantern sometime soon before they take off the light bulb, because that movie bombed. I knew it was going to bomb. You knew it was going to bomb. We all knew it was going to bomb. But obviously somebody at the studio didn't think it was going to bomb, because they spent $300 million on that film. $300 million. I don't think Titanic cost that much. I mean, my God. And that's the best they can deliver. So my brother Pastor said I should check it out. I might check it out. I said it's a bootleg or matinee. He said matinee. So I may creep in there tomorrow, see what's up in the cut. But my God, it only made like $52 million. It came in less than X-Men First Class. So, you know, X-Men First Class is a good film. I like how it's set in the 60s. You know, I have my issue of how to check out one of the characters, and those that know me know what I'm talking about. But it's very good how it's set back in the 60s. Catch that, the attire, the vibe, the flow. I like that. I don't know why we don't see more films like that coming out of Black Hollywood. There's a lot of folks out there who are writing these pieces like X-Men or in the same genre as Blade Runner or Super 8, but for some reason either we're not getting the financing, they're not getting the financing, we're in this together, so we're not getting the financing, or folks just aren't, they just want to see more of the same old, same old. So anyways, today's show, people, let's see, have we done some business today? No. Yes, we have. Joella's not here today, our producer. She's on vacation. She's over there, actually in Hawaii, for another 2 weeks. So it's just you and I. Dun, 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 dun. Do I have that in the rotation here? Some Rick James there. Sorry about that, folks. I'm not trying to sing. Today's Groove. They have to say hello to. Yes, there's the Binga clan, the Kabongo clan, Kendra. My little sister, she finished her 9-week Bikram yoga teacher's orientation out here. She was out here for a while. It was really intense. I didn't get to see her. until like almost the day, second to last day, where I just rolled down there, surprised her, and it was very emotional seeing her at that time. She was really emotional herself. You know, she's my little sister, so I had to go see her. So congratulations. You know, I'm working in the mix of interviewing Bajimba consultants in reference to their program they're working on. That'd be Mwadi Bajimba. And also looking at talking to Shaumba down the road and Musa Masanga of her organization, Masanga Management. I think she changed the name to something else, though. So there's a couple of interviews I want to get in there. We definitely want to get Howard Simpson on the mic. You know, every time we have these conversations about film or life, technology, media, whatever, that we always go into so many things. We can just, literally within like an hour and a half, 2 hours, we just cover so many areas, comic books, sci-fi, what have you. So we're going to definitely have hook that up. And a little surprise interview I'm trying to put together. We can work that out somewhere down the road. We'll see what's up. So, people, today, what's up with you guys? You know, it's supposed to be a rebroadcast of the Congo Vision interview. I want it crispy clear because when I heard it before, I was hearing all these background noises. I didn't know this was even there. Yet, ironically, it's one of the highest listening show I have on our station here. So I'm debating whether I want to play it or I won't play it, but I probably will because I think a lot of people have not heard it. So I'll definitely play it at the 30 minutes in to our show here. So I'll see what we can do here. I'll get you some more time on that mix. Now, before I forget, I must say congratulations to my Boston Bruins. Yes, you all know we won the Stanley Cup in Vancouver, the land, the area of that lunatic Rwandan up there, Luisa. I haven't talked in a while. I hope she's doing well. I believe she's doing her on-the-street interviews. So all you guys in Vancouver, if some fine Rwandan comes down the street with a camera and she's asked you questions, stay on business first. Don't ask for the phone number first. Ask her all her questions because she'll probably get deep and ask you something out of the blue that'll really make you think. So really be on the lookout. I believe it's a nice program she's going to be there. You know, up in Vancouver from the Vancouver Canuck fans. My God, folks was rioting like, oh, my God, what was going on up there? But, you know, that's their business. The Boston Bruins, Stanley Cup champions, people. We haven't won a belt since 1972. Not the belt, the championship in 1972. 1970, I'm old enough, I'm old enough or I was young enough at that time to remember those championships. People, it's a great day, very emotional. And the story of Tim Thomas has to be really understood because I think he's a story of perseverance, not just the Bruins overall, but his story of how he came to the league, how he played overseas, Europe, Swiss, minors, and at 37 to really bring the mission as he did. It's really a testament to perseverance and not giving up when everybody else would give up. And one of the things that always touches my spirit is the story that when he was, you know, a young kid back in the day, that he wanted to go to goalie camp, but the family didn't have enough money. So what his parents did, his mom and dad, what they did was they sold their wedding bands so they could have enough money to send him to goalie camp. I mean that's sacrifice. My mom's done that for me. My dad's done that for me. My family's done it for me. We all do it for each other. And that's where you have faith. We just believe. And it's not about words. It's about action. And what feeling, I'd love to know when I talk to Tim Thomas when I go back to Boston, I want to ask him, what was going through your head when you just holding up the Conn Smythe? You know, MVP of the team. And then when you touched the cup, what was going through his head? You know, was he thinking about all those journeys when they interviewed him, they asked him, okay, so how do you say this? And in this language, he said it in a different language. The guy said, no, that's Finland. He goes, well, I played there too. He was all over the place. And it's really a story of perseverance for all you cats out there about you're wondering when it's going to happen. You're putting all this work in. As my cousin, my little sister Esther says, you're putting all this work in and everything's going so slow so you think nothing's happening. But then, you know, trust me, it's really happening. It's really flowing. But you can't give up. And if you feel like giving up, find somebody that's really had faith and you sit back and look at it and list down all the people that have really helped you out when you really thought it wasn't going to happen. Whether it be some bus, you know, money for bus fare to an audition, whether it's like letting you use a computer so you can do a resume and you got the job. Whether someone picking you up and driving you to a job interview, or I remember when the buses was on strike back in the day here in L.A., and I had to get to work. I remember my neighbor drove me from North Hollywood all the way down to Hollywood. I'll never forget that to this day. He's an actor from Germany, so I'm definitely going to hook him up, you know, with a role or something like that because he has some awesome talent. So for those that want to give up, think about Tim Thomas' story when he could have gave up. And even when the Bruins, when the rumors were on that they wanted to trade him from the Bruins, he was saying, I don't want to leave. Now look. Conn Smythe MVP player for the MVP, Stanley Cup championship, and then He's a lock. They're saying he's a lock for the Vicenza Award, best goalie in the league. So I'm just imploring you, don't give up, but just know where you want to go. And what is your vision? Is it your vision or is it somebody else's vision? Because sometimes if you're putting your effort in someone else's vision, you'll get drained a lot quicker than you would if it was your own vision. So really think about that. Are you doing it for you or are you doing it for other people? Because one thing, you're doing it for other people because they've really invested in you, you don't want to let them down. You want to make sure their investment, their sacrifice in you wasn't in vain. Yet, conversely, if you're doing it for somebody else because that's what they want you to do, well, you have to really question if that's your vision. Follow your vision, follow your heart. It won't lie to you. Now, I have to send a message up to my people in Vancouver. Look, you have to show the love, as Luisa was talking about there. You know, it was very classy to see some of the Vancouver fans clapping when the Bruins had the Stanley Cup, because you can best believe that was Montreal. They would have walked out. They gave them the love, they gave them the applause, but there were too many riots going out there. There was that great picture people took of that guy and girl on the floor during the riots where he was checking to see if his woman's okay. Oh, talk about love. Woo. And the father put on Facebook, that's how us men roll. You know, whatever. But I want to, let me send a song out to the people up there in Vancouver, and we'll come back to our show. So we're going to do our Congo Vision rebroadcast. It's not as clear as I thought it would be, but, you know, I was going to play. I had to be a man of my word. Don't forget, this Sunday we have a show on Syria, Battle Syria. You know, the battle between President Assad and the people of Syria is getting deep, getting intense, getting more vicious and murderous. Yet, where is no fly zone over Syria? It's a lot deeper than people think. So, here's a message to the people up there in Vancouver. I believe they speak French. So, you got to take a little break for love up there, all right? Let's ride.
C'est l'heure pour amour. Mmh.
I got this couple of texts here on my phone, obviously. Can you get like a text on your computer? And I'm being asked to play some song that had to do with Dre. And I keep asking, what are they talking about? And they say, forget about Dre. And I know what they're talking about. So let's do it like this. We'll play that on the backside. Let's get to our interview while people are here. Oh, I see what's going on. Okay. You want to hear that song and another song that we play among the African, I think it's called Gua. So we'll come to that on the backside of this interview, and then we'll do what we do. All right, I hope you guys are well. So I can get as clean as I want to get, but have fun. I'm out. I'll be here in the background doing my thing.
They come like millennials. That's what happens.
To another edition of Congo Vision Forum. Our guest today is Said Yenga Kakese Dibinga. Said Kakese Dibinga wears a lot of hats. He's an advocate for the Democratic Republic of Congo, an activist, a publisher, a writer, a media producer. Oh, he also teaches technology in a charter school in the LA area. He was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but he's lived in this country for more than 25 years. Mr. Kakese, hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We're going to discuss the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Let me start off by asking you what your assessment of the current situation in DRC is.
It's a joke. You know, it's really a joke. The situation in DRC, it just seems to be getting worse by the day, by the minute, by the hour. It just seems like people are just, you know, interested in saving their own face instead of saving the people that they're supposed to be there for. And I think after all the hopes and aspirations and dreams and activity we had for our recent election, I think it was just basically an election to maintain the status quo right now. Nothing's getting better, and people just seem to be looking out for their own interests, and this is what people voted for.
You've been following the situation in DRC. Do you have an update on the peace talks that are taking place in Nairobi, Kenya, between the government, the Congolese government, and the CNDP rebels?
Actually, I do. I spoke to someone in Nairobi about on my way to where I'm right now. The update is that they're going to continue the peace talks in January. Included in the peace are complaining that the government is occupying towns and villages vacated by the rebels. And on top of that, there's words coming out that a businessman out of Rwanda who's making almost $1 million a week out of Congo, he's upset now with the UN report being put forward that he's concluding also. So the peace accords right now are on standby until middle of January, which is another joke because, you know, people are still dying, so what are they waiting for?
Mm-hmm. You're doing a wonderful job with your radio. Can you tell us a little bit about your radio? What is its mission and what is your target audience?
My mission is basically to just speak, you know, truthfully, not as an intellectual, not as a government official, not as an academic, not as someone trying to get a job anywhere and trying to be friends with everybody. Basically, to speak the truth about what's going on, presenting the facts as they are so that people can't say they didn't know, and presenting the facts, you know, whether it makes people look good or look bad, just letting people know what's going on. And the target audience is really the colonies themselves who are looking for another venue along with Congo Vision and other forums to hear what's going on back home, respond to what's going on back home. And outside of the Congolese community, the diaspora, if you want to say, it's all those people who are trying to figure out a way to be an ally, a true ally of Congo, but the information they're getting is making it sound so complicated they don't know where to begin. So I'm hoping to reach out to them saying, this is the situation, this is what's going on, ABC, not what you want to do. That's it.
And how long have you been around? How long has your radio been around?
It's actually a little over a month now. I believe we started in November. I heard the report. I heard an interview on one of these other stations out of D.C. So we started, I think it was the first week in November. So about 2 months now.
Why do you think Congo war stories appear rarely on local news in the United States?
Because people are making too much money off what's going on back home in different ways. I mean, they want to talk. I mean, for example, Kony just killed 35 more people up there on the border of Uganda. Ugandan warplane crashed in Congo a couple days ago. But what's happening is that there's this fatigue. I don't think it's, okay, who can we focus on for this month? And unfortunately, Congo is not having the advocates like they are for Darfur or for Rwanda or for the, you know, Houston, Ukraine or what have you. We don't have that. So that's what the scenario is right now. They, you know, people talk about what's going on in Congo, but they always refer to it as a humanitarian crisis, refugees going from Goma to Bukavu or from wherever, wherever, but they never talk about what's the root causes. But we're starting to see a little bit more of those stories coming out now. But that's the main reason. They don't want to talk about, you know, these corporations are making money off what's going on back home, and they're not really interested in talking about the truth and have their hands, you know, showing that they have blood on it.
Let me have your take on the root cause of the crisis in DRC. I wrote a paper on that. What is your take on that? What is the root cause?
Rwanda. This is, I mean, it basically comes down to, and this isn't like Rwanda thing. It's basically Rwanda, to a lesser extent, Uganda, and the Congolese within DRC aligned with them. You know, Rwanda's main, you know, if people know the true story about the genocide back in 94, a lot of people don't know there were actually American troops in Rwanda that in Burundi actually that was being mobilized. But the Rwandans, Kagame, he was telling the Americans, don't come in. He told the UN, don't come in, or we're going to fight you. The French said, you know what, forget you. We need to stop saving these people, regardless of our alliances or differences. We need to stop the genocide. There was actually a point in western Rwanda, east of the border of DRC, outside the Kivu, where the French army was actually literally in combat against Kagame's rebels. But, you know, it was from that moment on that Rwanda decided, hey, look, our interest is paramount to anybody else's. And, you know, the West was feeling guilty with Rwanda, and they used that to their advantage, you know, the battered wife syndrome. But the root cause is basically Rwanda. They feel they are justified to invade Congo whenever they want. They feel they're justified, you know, to loot Congo whenever they want. They feel like they can support any militia whenever they want because they feel that they were abandoned, even though they're the ones that basically almost brought the genocide upon themselves by prolonging it, by not negotiating with anybody, including the ex-Rwandan government that was in exile. So the root cause is Rwanda, in reference to minimal exploitation and land exploitation. They want the land and the cable, case closed. And the people supporting Rwanda, the West, and other African countries, they're all using Rwanda as a middleman to exploit Congo. So that way they don't have to deal with the government and do it officially.
And what about the French? I mean, these are the people who brought the Interahamwe into the Kivu region. Should they be more involved in trying to help send them back home, or what role do you think they should play right now?
They should have a very forceful role in sending them back home. I mean, we, you know, us as Congolese, and a lot of us have our issues with the French. They're not exactly, you know, the nation of prosperity when it comes to the continent. But the French, you know, yeah, they allowed to get the Hamway, you know, into the country. But they also created a buffer zone in Rwanda to separate the Hutu refugees going to Congo from the RPF who was hunting them down. But I believe the French should be involved. And in fact, if you look at the Ituri region, when the French led military force got involved there, they basically brought that situation with the Lemon and the Hindu to a resolution very quickly. Unfortunately, once they left, Uganda started getting back into the Ituri region and started manipulating the situation. But the French, they need to be in the front of this. They need to be in the front saying, we have to resolve the situation. We do have a part to play in what the situation is going on. No end to Hamway, no problem to keep.
How can Congolese citizens around the world be more involved in being part of the solution?
They need to be like, you know, the thing with Congo Vision, and you guys have been out there for a long time. Congo Vision, let me use that as an example. Congo Vision is one of those organizations, you know, your portal. The UN will come out and say there are reports of Rwandan soldiers in Goma and Bukavu. But then Congo Vision will put up video footage of the Rwandan soldiers in Bukavu or Goma with Rwandan ID. And I think what we need to do is stop being reactionary. A website was made about some new federalist state in Kivu and all the colonies reacted. What we need to do is stop arguing amongst ourselves, look at the country, and really start advocating by saying, you know what, let's tell our story, let's put the media out there, let's do a short story, a short film, a short play, or something like that, and let's really start unifying beyond the ethnic lines and the ethnic divisions we have back home. You know, there's too many people who are saying, well, the Swahili phones are responsible for this one, the Kabila. And the Swahili phones say, well, the Lingala phones are responsible for this one, the Mobutu. But never mention, you know, you're coming from Congo, I'm coming from Nyema. You know, it's still our country. So what we need to do is support the Congo Vision, support the people out there who have very little resources and are doing what they need to do. And say, let's get the word out. Let's use the media like the way the Rwandans did. And that's how the Rwandans did it. And what they did was they linked their situation to the Jewish situation. Well, you know, we have an extermination going on. So we should, you know, link our situation to any mass killing around the planet. So that's what we need to start doing as Congolese. Start using the media. Conferences are nice, dissertations are nice, papers are nice, but let's stop using the media to say, this is what's going on in the simplicity. Here are the facts in the simplicity. And what do you want to do? And if they don't want to do anything, at least they can't say to us, we didn't know. There you go.
Okay. And the crisis in DRC has produced what is known as the worst humanitarian disaster of our time. There is a perception that very little is being done to end the crisis. Why is the United States not running in Rwanda and Uganda or even DRC to force a definitive solution to the crisis?
Because they have a conflict of interest. If there's no crisis, then they have to do business in a legitimate, transparent way. If there is a crisis, then, you know, they don't have to. I mean, everybody knows all of a sudden after 96, Rwanda is exporting mineral. Rwanda has as much mineral as the parking lot behind the building I'm standing in right now. But, you know, all of a sudden they're exporting gold and all these minerals and all these, diamonds and coltan and Uganda to a lesser extent. It's a conflict of interest, you know. You want to deal with the government in Kinshasa and do it transparently, and it's the government that you wanted. Or, you know what, let's just let the humanitarian crisis escalate, and we'll just deal with the middlemen. So we can say, we didn't know where it came from, but, you know, we'll give lip service to, we need to support the peace treaty in Nairobi. We need to support the ICD in South Africa. It's all lip service. The U.S. and the British won't get involved. Because, you know, other colonies also aren't forcing them to get involved. There was more excitement about President-elect Obama's election by the colonies than there was about raising awareness about what's going on in Eastern Congo and the American support for it. The biggest embassy right now in Africa is being built in Rwanda. So what does that tell you?
Exactly what should the U.S. do to help the Congo? How can it help make a difference?
Cut off the aid to Rwanda. It's that simple. everything. If you see King Leo, if you see the Irish did it, the Dutch did it, the Swiss are doing it. When you see the reports of the slaughter that's taking place, they've cut off the economic aid to the country. As Uganda, Rwanda is a donor state. Most of their budget comes from outside the country. All the United States has to do is do like the Israelis, give their Palestinians, cut off the money. Say, hey, look, if you don't resolve this right now, you're not going to get any money. Rwanda has no other options but then to pull back. And the situation is that you cut off the table, the legs. So Rwanda is the legs on the table. The table is in Korda. So you get rid of, you deal with Rwanda in that situation, then you deal with them Korda. But that's the easiest way. Diplomatic encompasses won't work. Just start threatening economic aid to the country. Resolve it or cut off your aid. A month of no economic aid in Rwanda will have a lasting effect in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, it goes without saying that the U.S. Needs to show a greater resolve and more leadership to help end the crisis in DRC. As long as it doesn't do anything, nobody else is going to get involved. The international community is not going to get involved. And yes, this is the same international community through the UN that authorized the French to bring the Hutus into the Congo in 1994. Now, why isn't the same international community helping return the remaining Rwandan Hutu militiamen to their country?
Because what's going on is that we as Congolese are not forcing the issue. That, what happens is that a lot of us in the Congolese community and abroad, again, this is just my view and my opinion, so it's my answer into this scenario. Too many of us, the saying that my mother shared with me in Chiluba in reference to, we don't ask the fox to watch the hen house, we ask the chicken to do that. And by that it means that too many of us are looking outside to other people to do what's right for Congo. The one thing about the Rwandans, regardless of what we say about Kagame, those guys, they look out for their own interests first. Even though we know the fact that their own interests benefit everybody else's interests, we as Congolese, we tend to put everybody else's interests first before our interests. So if Congo made a decision to say, you know what, forget what the Americans have to say, forget what the West has to say, forget what South Africa has to say, we got 8 million dead. We got 1,200 dying a month. We got 45,000 dying. We have, 1,200 dying a day, 45,000 dying a month. Forget this. It's been 96 days. We're going to do what we need to do. We're going to solve this militarily. If no one likes it too bad, they have their shot. We have a justification as Congolese in our national sovereignty and integrity to do what we need to do for the country. But unfortunately, 65% of our budget is coming from outside the country, including the U.S. So what's happening is that we're putting our national rights and sovereignty in other people's hands. So once the Congolese say, okay, Americans, look, we asked you to do this for so much time. With Mobutu, we tried to get rid of him, you can't support him. The British, we tried to get rid of those guys, you can't support those guys in Katanga. Rwanda, here's the situation, you know it's going, support Rwanda, you support Kagame, you support Museveni. You know what, forget it. We're going to do what we need to do for our country and call it a day. And then if people want to have questions about what that really happened, well, we know what the effect would be. Look what happened when Congo said, you know what, we're not going to do business with the IMF and the World Bank. We're going to do this big, we're going to do this deal with China. And you saw the reaction that the Americans out of the West had very quickly. Wait a minute, hold on, we have to reevaluate our situation in Congo. Once we start doing that, then you'll see the West falling into place in reference to supporting Congo. Because one thing that the Western people like is they like a strong power anywhere. And they will align with that strong power anywhere. And that makes the situation we have to have as Congolese. We can address the situation by taking matters into our own hands. Then people go along with us. Otherwise, we're dead. And dying.
The rebel leader, Laurent Nkunda, is a former army officer of the Rwanda Defense Forces. He claims to stop the genocide of his Tutsi ethnic group in the Congo. Is it acceptable that more than 5 million Congolese lose their lives to protect the Tutsi minority in the Congo?
No, because basically what's coming down to is that in Kunda, sooner or later, as they work, the saying goes, what goes around comes around. There is not a justification in the world. The Tutsis, what have you, Banyamulenge, Mulenge, whatever they're calling themselves this week, and I'm not saying it in a racist way, it's just seeing the name change every other week. They're a minority within a minority within a minority. I mean, they couldn't even build a village in Bukavu. So for him to stand there and say, okay, well, Oprah and Anderson Cooper were defending the rights of the minority Tutsi. Okay, yes, we're killing thousands of Bashi. Yes, we're killing Sambu. We're killing Baluba. Yes, we're killing the Shawnee. Yes, we're killing some Bakutsu. headquartered in Kunda. Well, first you send your car to leave, and you want to defend the country. But the man, this guy in Kunda comes in the picture and says, particularly Tutsi, now he's Tutsi first, and your car to leave maybe second. So look, this is what's going to happen. You took out my village, we're going to come get you. That's the situation in Kunda's created. It happened in Rwanda, it happened in Burundi. Yeah, it's a bad excuse for a joke. We got like almost 8 million dead. What can you possibly say to defend the Tutsi? It's a joke, and everybody knows it.
And by the way, Congo has more than 400 ethnic groups. Most of them are minority groups.
Exactly.
Darfur is getting a lot of attention. Why do you think Darfur gets more attention than Congo?
Because, anytime it's a situation of it's quote-unquote Arab oppressing the blacks, whereas a clear division like South Africa, where it's the minority white oppressing the majority blacks and the colors and those people, whatever, then people can relate to that. You know, they can say, well, the Arab, quote unquote, the Arab militia, the Arab Janjaweed, the Arab, what have you, are oppressing the poor little black Africans in Darfur. That's what it comes down to. And then basically you tie that the aspect of the anti-Muslim ideology that seems to be very prevalent. People can relate to that very easily. But what a lot of people don't know is half the Janjaweed came from Darfur. And it was the Darfurian rebels that started the whole fight in the first place. And they used the Darfurian civilians as shields against the Khartoum army who was fighting against fighting against Gorang in the south. But when it comes to Congo, the Baluba, the Bakusu, the Songhe, the Bakongo, you're looking at black person fighting black person. People can identify with that. People can pick the good side, what have you. It's almost like black-on-black crime in America, But if a white police officer kills a black guy, then that's very easy to define. If a black police officer kills a black guy, then how do you take racism? So that's the situation in Congo.
And you see a game being played by Western media whenever they talk about the victims of the Congo conflict. The media often talks about the cause of death, starvation, diseases. They don't stop by just giving the number of victims. They need to add the cause of death. Could you expand on that?
I guess you're on my broadcast, but that really just irritates me. It goes back to when they talk about our Jewish brothers and sisters dying in the Holocaust. They will say 6 million dead. They won't say 6 million raped to death, stoned to death, executed, gassed, what have you. They'll just say 6 million dead. Period, case closed, that's it. When it comes to the killing fields in Cambodia, with the Khmer Rouge, whatever, they'll say 1.2 million or a million were killed. Slaughtered, that's it. That's the case closed. When it comes to Darfur, when it comes to Rwanda, they'll say 500,000 or half a million, were murdered. They'll say Tutsis and Rwanda, but they'll say straight up, straight there. They won't say they got run over by a car. They won't say they died from disease. They won't say they died from hunger. They won't say they died in the gas chamber. They'll say dead. They want to come to Darfur and they want to say 200,000 have died. 200,000 have died. Not from dehydration, not from a long stretch, not from eating the wrong food. They'll just say 200,000 dead. That's it. They'll say 1.2 million displaced. That's it. But when it comes to the Congo, I guess we must be different or something like that, because they have to quantify the fact that, 5.4 million have died. But most of that was from death and starvation. If I'm starving to death out there in the Kivu, I'm not thinking about the appendix of, dear Lord, I died because I starved to death. I'm dead. Death is death. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to tell you that, first off, we have this stereotype that we're a bunch of poor Africans that have nothing to eat but the family. It's an old pundu. Instead of saying the fact that, 5.4 million, and that's an understatement, because the Red Cross was 5 million back in 2003, and I have a document to prove it. What about 7 million dead? And all they want to say is to me, to you, to the advocates out there, the people of Congo, they want to say, but they mostly died from death and starvation. Like there's a justification for why they died. Because what happens is they come out and put the report out on the headlines that says 7 million Congolese dead, murdered because of this. Then the international community is going to be forced to intervene. But if you justify the death, you don't have to get involved to prevent the death. There you go. It just really irritates me. It is so disrespectful of us, not just as Congolese, but as human beings, because you're justifying our death. Well, how come the person died of disease? They couldn't get to the hospital because they went off to the field, they got raped. When they went down the road, they got kidnapped, made to child soldiers. When they went down the road, they got killed. And then when they got to where they thought the hospital was going to be, it was destroyed by the rebels supported by Uganda and Rwanda. They
you don't say that person.
This person died of disease. If they died of starvation, of course they died. They couldn't go to the field because it was said either rape, murder, or shot, or gunned down, or conscripted as a child soldier. Then the food was being burned. The rebels came out and made a mass exodus from Bukavu down to Goma, so they couldn't eat. They're starving. They circle the camps. The IRC can't get in. The Red Cross can't get in. Boys can't get in. They can't get no food, so they're starving to death. Well, why is it when our Jewish brothers and sisters were being starved to death by the Nazis, that's death? But when it comes to Carl Lee starving to death over there in Bukavu or Sakiba or whatever, there's a justification, that's a joke.
I clearly see your passion about this. It's very emotional, and it's emotional not only for you. It's emotional for all of us, all the Congolese who watch what's happening in the Congo. There is another weapon that's being used for this genocide. It's sexual violence. They're using sexual violence to drive women away out of that of their villages. What do you think about that?
You know, I remember when the Taliban was running Afghanistan, and a lot of people knew what they were doing there. They'll bring a very strict law on their perception of Islamic rule to the country. They destroyed the two statues, and they were doing the execution, things like that. The one thing that really got people motivated, if that's the right word to use, that brought attention to what was happening in Afghanistan was when President Bush's wife, Laura Bush, brought the issue of the women being raped and slaughtered in that country. You saw an exponential increase in support for that country. It's the same thing when they talk about Rwanda, and you see that move home to Rwanda where they show the quote-unquote 51 being raped and stuff like that. When you show those images, it touches on the aspect of your humanity of seeing a woman, which too often has been portrayed as in a lesser state, which is not true. But that, for some reason, tends to pour in everybody. But again, when it comes to the Congo, and brother, I get emotional when it comes to this, because that's our mothers and sisters and grandmothers out there. When I'm seeing stories of a 98-year-old woman being raped by 15 men over and over and over again, and then there's no one to defend her, it gets me. When I go see something like King Leopold's Ghost, that movie, there were certain issues about it. It was too pro Rwanda for me. But there's a scene in there where a woman in her 90s had her arm chopped off. That's too much. You see young girls just being brutalized. 15, 20 men kept their sex slaves. Where's the outcry? Where's the outrage? My brother only called talks about it in one of his poems when he has the spoken word. You know, people talk about that. The problem comes to it comes to stereotypes. How is it you can have 40,000 women raped in a period of time, and you want to negotiate with the people that's doing it? What do you say to the woman? Just like Sierra Leone, Liberia. I hacked off your arm, but you know what? To have my peace, they're going to make me a vice president, like they did with Rivera. They're going to make me someone person in parliament. Where's the justification? They're not only being raped by the Rwandans and Ugandans and those coward Congolese supporting them, they're being raped again because they're not being defended by anybody. Then these foreign governments come up with their little NGOs and they start doing these little shelters and things like that and start telling the Sylvesters and the Saeeds and the Omi Kongos and the Franklin Katundas about how we need to interact with our own Congolese women. How come they're living in Mobutu had an issue, you know that. But I cannot, you can correct me, I don't remember massive sexual genocide taking place in the Kivus, in Katanga, Kinshasa, Matata. It's ridiculous.
And
what more has to happen for people to realize there's extermination going on? Because the minister still, or Congo Vision, or whoever takes matters into their own hands, then they're going to come and say, well, you know, we have to have a peace conference to justify no more slaughter and extermination. What about the 40,000 that's being raped? How many villages have been destroyed because of that? That's a joke. I'm done.
Lisa Jackson talks about this in her documentary. What's the title again? The Greatest Silence. I watched the documentary with tears in my eyes. In 1994, the international community stood by as more than 800,000 Tutsi and moderate Hutu were slaughtered in Rwanda. The world vowed not to allow such a tragedy to occur again. Why is it allowing it to occur now?
Yeah, I know that's something that always comes up when I ask some people. You know, you want to ask, when does never again happen? When does never again become never again? It goes, it's kind of funny because I think 2 weeks ago a paper came out on, I think some powerful intellectuals in the United States got together and they put together a paper that they want to give to President-elect Obama in reference to the U.S. policy towards genocide prevention. And as I was reading it, I was getting so nauseous and laughing at the same time. Because it kept saying, and this was written last week, it kept saying, when the next genocide appears, this will should happen. When the next humanitarian appears, this will happen. When the next catastrophe of slaughter of people, this will happen.
As if it's not happening now.
Exactly. Just by reading that, the reader's being convinced that, well, there's not, I guess nothing's happening now. And it's the same thing coming back to Darfur. People always say we can't have another Rwanda happen in Darfur. We can't have another Bosnia happen in Darfur. Well, what about Congo? Come on, give me a break. So this whole situation of people standing by and watching it's a joke. It's too many people have too many interests to have this thing perpetuate. It's hard to believe for some people that the very Tutsis and Hutus, but the Tutsis who survived the genocide in Rwanda. And you never hear a Congolese justify it. We always say it's not right what happened. Whatever the scenario, it's the people find it hard to believe that the very survivors are the perpetrators of an extermination in Congo. People cannot conceive that. All they have to see is sometimes in April. All they have to do is watch Oprah when she talks about the FDLR. All they got to do is see Ben Affleck when he talks about the Rwandan Hutus. All you got to see the Greatest Silence when she talks about the Rwandan Hutus and all those people. The idea that the very people who are survivors are now involved, the murderers, has not been presented to the masses. And that's what people seem to forget. When we got invaded in 96 and we got invaded in 98, thousands of those that suffered in the Rwanda genocide came into Congo to get revenge. If they couldn't find the Hutu, they took on the Congolese.
And that's the reason why many Congolese are now beginning to have mixed feelings about the genocide in Rwanda, the genocide that happened in 1994. I mean, we felt really, really bad and sorry for the people who were victims of that horrendous genocide. Now the same people are coming and doing the same thing in the Congo. So could you tell us a little bit about the Bayindo group, your group Bayindo? Bayindo stands for black, right?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Bayindo stands for black, right?
Yeah. They don't ask what it means. I think a lot of folks don't. You know, some people think I'm an Asian company. Oh. I'm a guy out of Hong Kong.
Okay. reserved, or they don't really trust Hillary Clinton. What do you think is going to happen?
Nothing will get worse. It's two things, if I may slide two things in there. One thing that's hurting us is the image. When you have movies, when you have these documentaries like Lisa's showing women comedies being raped, sadly, the stereotype of us being lesser is one of the reasons why we're not getting the assistance. And now, you know, the situation of Congo is being defined as a humanitarian crisis with the rapes. You see the movies all there. They're being raped. But, you know, it's kind of been like that for thousands of years. That's what they are trying to say. And we as Congolese have used the media to change that image, because this is not the Congo that you and I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing that to the forefront when it comes to President Barack Obama, you know, way too many Congolese. I was getting text messages after he got elected were saying to me that, you know, we won, you know. And I'm like, what do we win? John McCain's foreign policy towards Africa was compared to President-elect Barack Obama's foreign policy towards Africa by the think tank in Washington, D.C. And to a person, they all said President-elect Barack Obama's policy towards Africa is exactly the same as John McCain's. And John McCain is based on President Bush's. And John McCain's wife is best friends with Paul Kagame's wife. Hillary Clinton's husband was overseeing the whole extermination in the first place when he gave Kagame the go-ahead to come in. Susan Rice has now tasked to be the United Nations ambassador, pending her confirmation by the Senate and the House. She's the person, though, the assistant secretary of Africa, who basically told our ambassador in Washington, D.C., who said the peace deal is not good for Congo. Susan Rice, Dr. Rice came out and said, I think she's a doctor, came out and said, yes, it is good for Congo, it's good for everybody. Well, it's not about being good for everybody. It's what's good for Congo. So now we have a voice in the United Nations. You got Hillary Clinton. When was the last time she spoke about Congo? When was the last time she visited Congo during her journey around the world? And on top of that, I believe President-elect Obama was asked about the humanitarian crisis and U.S. intervention, and he referred to Congo, among other places, during one debate. He never answered the question. So things aren't going to get any better. Things may, when you keep the hope and the change that people are talking about, but when you see the very people who were in the Clinton administration now being part of the Obama administration, and a lot of people were responsible for why we're in the situation in the first place, how are they supposed to change all of a sudden? Why are we supposed to sit back and say, oh, now we're going to be a friend of Africa? Well, he never said he was a friend of Africa during his campaign. So what's supposed to be different? And now we have Susan Rice. The only good thing that came out recently was that the UN mandate got extended for another year, even though I think, you know, what have they done in the years they've been there? So it's going to be very interesting to see how Susan Rice addresses that if she becomes the ambassador to the United States, the United Nations. But for me, I personally, based on the record of those coming into office, Samantha Powers, the friend of Rwanda, she's an advisor for President Obama, you have Dr. Rice, you have all these other people. Sadly, Jedediah Frazier. Sadly, for me, I don't know what role Ms. Frazier will have. But I don't see a change in foreign policy. And I think Barack Obama is going to focus on domestic policy with the economy and the recession and the unemployment, and let Secretary of State elect or designee Hillary Clinton deal with the foreign policy. And if that happens, nothing's going to change. Nothing's really going to change. She never did anything about Congo.
But let's give credit where credit is due. Senator Obama did ask President Bush to initiate some actions towards the Congo, to do something against the sexual exploitation of women that was taking place there. He even co-sponsored a bill for the Congo for democracy promotion for the Congo. Don't you think that... With that kind of involvement, he may help do something for the Congo. I mean, he's going to be setting the tone. He's going to be telling the administration what to do. So Hillary Clinton is going to be doing what Barack Obama is going to ask her to do.
We'll see, because I'm not, you know, I know about the humanitarian aid he's talking about, sexual violence. The problem is that when he approved the measure with the other senator, and I have a lot of love. Again, we always give credit where credit's due, and that's one thing I think we should do more of, because a lot of people are trying to work with the Congo. So I give him credit for pushing that resolution of, I think, like $52 million over 2 years. But that resolution was directed at American institutions in the Congo. And on top of that, a good friend of mine, Solange, down in Miami, made a good point. We're borrowing our own money because that's $52 million over 2 years. If you want to confide, $72 million in diamonds alone leave that place every year. That's one province. So if you do the math, we're getting less than we actually have ourselves, whatever. Once we can resolve the humanitarian crisis, and that goes to the sexual violence, yes, he was talking about the sexual violence, but he wasn't talking about the root cause of how they ended up being in that situation in the first place. He's talking more about rehabilitation and care for the women. Well, how are we going to address, we need to address the situation why they became victims in the first place. But she never solved it to this extent under the old dictatorship of Sisteteco. So I give Barack the initiative. I give him much respect, much love for the bill he helped pass and him speaking to a certain extent on what we need to do for the Congo. At the same time, Congo is not Namibia. We're not some state that has nothing. I mean, I love my Namibians, so people on protest, you know, take it out on me. Congo, we shouldn't be getting foreign aid when we have our aid under our feet. This is the problem. They're giving us 50, it's like those little check cashers, these places where you go to withdraw the bank account. You have your $100 check and they take 5% out. They're giving us $52 million over 2 years. They're taking out $72 million in one. So they're not losing any money. They're not spending money they don't have. They're giving us our own money that they're looting from us. What we need to do is have a situation. Look at China. China had nothing a couple years ago. Now they have a $13 billion sovereign wealth fund. That should be Congo. But we don't need economic aid. We don't need humanitarian aid. We should pay off all our debts in a week. That's how much money we have. So all this stuff for sexual violence, all this stuff to help with humanitarian aid, is painting the figure that Congo has nothing. And if people believe Congo has nothing, then they won't be able to understand that Congo has everything, which is why there is sexual violence, why there is a humanitarian crisis, and why there's discrimination going on in the East. So I give much love to President Barack Obama for at least speaking up on certain issues when it comes to the DRC. But at the same time, people are being hoodwinked, as Malcolm X would say, are being hoodwinked and bamboozled to believe that's the state of Congo. We as Congolese need to let people know, we are not some backwater country that has nothing. We have everything you need. You want it, you have to kill us to get it, do business the right way, and everybody is happy. But unfortunately, so many people convinced that we need to have aid for Congo. We need to have aid for Congo. We already have the money. That's why you're here. You're looting it from us, and now you want to let it back to us with the interest rate? Give me a break.
Well, in order for the Congo to be able to do all those things that you're talking about, you need solid leadership in the Congo. Do you have that?
Do we have that?
Yes.
No. Then we don't. I mean, I think it was brought up that, in a conversation I had recently, the person was probably listening, they know who they are. But we don't. We have, when people want to come out and say, Kinshasa is supporting the FDLR, they do it and there's no response. It's like in America when you had the Swiss boat veterans coming out abusing John Kerry, and he said nothing. Our leadership in Kinshasa needs to be not making once-a-year Christmas resolutions and Happy New Year bonané. Needs to be in the media to the Congolese saying, look, let's get the story straight. We are not supporting the FDLR. We weren't occupying Kivu for 5 years when Rwanda was there. Rwanda was there. Who do you think was doing business with them? The Rwandans, the Ugandans. And now all of a sudden people want to say the FDLR is our problem all of a sudden when they were there? Who let them in there? The French. But now all of a sudden it's Kinshasa's problem. We want to solve this militarily and we put 10,000 troops in the Kivu to deal with this. All the international community came running down saying, oh, no, we have a peaceful conference. We have a peaceful conference. Forget that stuff. The leadership is not vocal. It's not upfront. It's not speaking to the Congolese, and it's not speaking on behalf of the Congolese. They're too quiet. So Kagame can say what he wants. People read that, and they say, oh, this must be what happened in Congo. Because, Sylvester, have you ever noticed that in a lot of these newspaper articles and on some websites, whatever, they're always asking the Rwandans, particularly Kagame and his prime minister and those guys, about their opinion about what's going on inside of DRC. But they never ask the Congolese, like Kabila or whoever, about what's going on in Rwanda. You ever notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Go to the Kony website. They're always saying, famous guy, let us know anything about the Congo. But they never say, Mr. Kabila, what do you think what's going on in Rwanda? Or how will Rwanda know what's going on in Congo? Because they're there. They're in Kinshasa right now. You think, what about them? Anyway. So what kind of leadership do we have? Could you imagine if Obama and Osama bin Laden, excuse me, Mr. President, I won't be like Jeremiah Wright. Could you imagine? Just imagine this. If Osama bin Laden was seen walking down the street in Washington, D.C. or North Carolina with a 300-strong militia today, you think he'd be on the street the next day? The Americans would steal off the city to find him. But no, Rivera hired RCD with Juan Diawamba and Jacques Delboche, who's trying to rebuild himself as some national Republican elite. He's walking around Kinshasa with a 300-strong militia. How many people did he kill? Where was his mom when we had 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, 5 million, 6 million colonies killed? Where was his mom then? But you kill 150 Burundians, some Tutsis in Burundi, he wants a national day of mourning for in Congo. And then he goes to Kigali and says, look, we need a national day of mourning. So is he Congolese or is he Rwanda or is he Tutsi? Which one is it? So how the leadership allow this man to walk the shop in the day? It makes no sense. It's embarrassing.
In closing, do you have any message for the Congolese or for Nkunda, for the United States?
Here's my message to the Congolese. Congo, look. Wolongwe over there in Kasai, Lumumba, Mulele, Zinga, Libanga. This isn't the Congo that they died and sacrificed for. We didn't kick out the Belgians just to have Congo be like this. We don't need some former colonial power to tell us what to do after we kicked them out, after we built that country, Antwerp, Brussels. We built those. How are they going to tell us what to do? We're Congolese. This is our country. Even better than those guys, as much as people dislike them, when the thought that the invaders was going to dismantle the country, even Bemba wasn't going to allow that. We are Congolese. We need to defend our country. You Congolese youth out there who are going to the country, stop trying to... The country needs you, because that's the country where your culture and your roots and your past come from, and you want a place to go back to or visit where you can say, this is my home, like the hospital they're building, the clinic they're building in Kasai. To the other people of the world, to the Americans, hey, look, it comes down to this. We're there in Bosnia. You talked about what happened in Cambodia. You talked about the slaughter in Nanking. You want to talk about Rwanda, you want to talk about Kony killing his people, the invisible children, you want to talk about what's going on in Darfur. Why are you so quiet about what's going on in the Congo? I'm not talking about Reese doing the run for Congo, which is a great initiative up in the Northwest. I'm not talking about Nita and those people in Washington, D.C., who come up over after who's doing what she needs to do, or the people up in the Bay Area. I'm talking to the Americans who say, look, so let's build a Congo, we want to do something. If you want to do something, go talk to a Congolese. Not one that has his own political agenda and thinks he needs to be the president of some community in the United States. Go talk to a colleague who will present the fact of this is what's going on in D.C. and ask him, what can we do? Don't tell him or her what you want to do or what you will do. Ask Mr. Sylvester, here are my resources. Which resource is going to help you in your situation? That's one thing that we have. To the global community, one day, President Trump said, Africa is the gun. Congo's the trigger. Other people have said, we'll have a Congo vote, Africa vote. That dam in Kinshasa can power the entire continent and sell stuff off to Europe. One day in our lifetime, we're going to see Congo was supposed to be. And the people that weren't there for Congo in this situation, we're going to remember them when we get where we have to be. I'm not talking about an invisible way or a mean way. It's about, now you want to come do business with us? Where were you after the 8 million person got killed? Why are you here now? So you have to make up your mind. You want to defend Congo with your resources and be an ally and be like the Asians who have good memory of those to help them out during the Nanking massacre and World War II and those things, the Indochina War, what have you? Or do you want to be a person that goes to Kinshasa and that person was someone that lived in North Carolina and remembered you saying, oh, well, the Congolese, they had it coming. You don't want that situation. You want to go to Kinshasa, you want to go to Shaba, you want to go to Manyela, or Bukavu, or Goma, and say, look, here's my dossier. I was advocating for you guys. Here's my resources. What can we do? One day, Congo's going to be where it's supposed to be, where it was, and we're going to live to see it. That's all I have to say.
Could you remind our listeners how they can access your website?
Oh, yeah, they can go to Blog Talk, my race, they can go to blogtalkradio.com, slash Saeed, S-A-I-D as in David, Dabinga, D as in David, I, B as in Bob, I, N as in Nancy, G-A. And let people know, I'm the son of Dabinga Wasaeed. Everybody thinks I'm my father is Dabinga, Dr. Dabinga Wasaeed, my mom's Dr. Ingalela Wakabunga. But a lot of people see my name, they think I'm my father. No, people, I'm the son. You can come check me out there. You can go to, find me on Facebook. You can go to MySpace, put in Severin. And, you know, you can see some of our archive articles. You can see some clips from our Congo movie, Once Upon a Time in the Congo, that would talk about the war. It's a feature film coming out next summer. People can, they can find me that way. They can go to ConvoVision. I think we have a link there. So write in. Let us know what you think. Listen to the station. Call in. Chat. But for me, it's not about me. It's about the fact that there's you with ConvoVision. There's the Congo Global Action. There's Congo. There's Layla. We have to communicate among each other and combine our resources instead of just working by ourselves, you know, in our different areas. You know, you are where you are. I am where I am. But look at this connection. This is the connection that people are afraid of. This is the connection that's going to build our country, one connection at a time. You guys, Color Vision, you've been there from day one. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you keep up. But I don't know. Every time somebody comes out, I go to Color Vision first. Hey, let me put one on here to make sure it's true. There you go.
Thank you very much. You have the brain of your father.
I tried, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I went down to the DRC, see what was going on, see what was going on and stuff like that. Yeah, conversely, you know, what are we going to do? It's our country, folks. What are we going to do? What difference are we going to make? It's in our hands. It's not going to be about just the women working by themselves or the men working by themselves. It's about all working together. And we're looking out for the Congo. All these other people who say they're, you know, they're aligned with the DRC. If you look what's been happening in D.C., I noticed that in D.C., every time there's these little you know, a group gets together to do something, a lot of these other groups that kind of run their mouths aren't there to support them, you know. I think that's the sad thing. I think when people do an event in D.C., we should all support each other instead of pointing fingers or thinking we're above these other people, because I'm going to tell you sooner or later, the truth is going to come out about some of these organizations that are out there advocating for DRC. I already know enough about a lot of them, but my main focus right now is on the film. You know, we're talking about this film, a lot of work. You know, we have Viva out now. I met the brother when they screened that movie a little while ago. So that's his view of Kinshasa. I have an issue with it. But again, that's his view of Kinshasa, his experience. I have my view of Kinshasa and DRC based on my experience. So we need to tell more stories. I know I saw my Facebook page. Some people had a mini movie. I had to play it on the low because I was doing some work. But it looked like there was a scene where they went with some soldiers, approach a woman. She thinks he's getting raped. And the husband thinks he's going to get assaulted. And what happened is that she was trailing kind of the woods. Then they cut to the village, one of the villages, and the woman comes in, and the soldier's walking behind her, and the husband thinks something's going to happen to him, he gets on his knees, And all that happened was the guy, apparently, the soldier carried the wood. And I think that his commander told the husband, like, yo, you need to be out there helping your woman carry this stuff. You know, why are you back here lounging? I couldn't really get, that's the flow I got. So I couldn't hear the dialogue itself. Because, again, I had it on the low. I had it off. So I was only for the visual. But I think I have the message of what he's doing. And obviously, if I can post here on my blog talk or find me on Facebook, it's over there. People tend to post stuff up on my page. So that's what we need to do. We need to show Congo as we see it. And we have to remember, it's not all the soldiers that are out there doing what they do that's destructive for the country. There's a lot more out there who are fighting for the country, that stood up for the country, and are standing by the country. And we need to honor those guys any way we can, you know, whether it's in our film or in what you do or what our listeners out there are advocating. Let's make sure we don't demonize everybody in the DRC. It's going to set us back. So, now then, you know, hope you had some fun with that. Let's come back into a little music here. Come a little close. Let's see here. We had like a little African vibe going on here. I'm thinking. Oh, I got something for you guys. Let's be playing a little African beat here. Let's go back to this nice little cut here that's usually played at the African party that gets all the Africans and West Indians on the floor.
Manger,
Can't do it. Can't do it. We already had it once. Can't do it twice. A friend of mine walked in and said, I got to hear it again. But you can't hear her because she's actually standing behind me, like, you know, doing those motions, you know, like sign language and stuff like that. So, nope, can't hear it again, my dear. But, you know, I'm getting a whole lot of people from Chicago. I mean, like, lately. And, you know, Chicago's that land of house music and stuff like that. So, I'm like, wait a minute. Let's give a shout-out to my people up there, out there in Chi-Town. And all you house heads out there that's in L.A. listening live and listening across the world.
Families are sick 'cause they all broken. Why do ghetto birds die before we learn to fly? fly. Somebody else would say I'm cooking guns, smoking weed. Can all make a change, so I'm told. But I haven't seen the change unfold. I keep open, please, if you prefer to breathe. Communities in need of people that believe. Keep your eyes open, I can only say I'll try until the day I die. I promise to be wise with my heart open, greed. Brings only misery, a way to tragedy. So I stay sucker free, only a few chosen rise. My ghetto queen, rise, don't be afraid to try. Too many ever die for the door to open. Wise, my brothers, be wise. Stay focused on the prize, so everybody dies.
We can only learn to take our anger and our hate. Control our mental state, settle down and set it straight. Maybe we can learn to take a second to pump the brakes before we set it, regret later and let it escalate. Cause by then it's just too late. There's so much we can take, and it's only so much someone can swallow or tolerate. Up to the point that he just breaks, snaps, and that's all it takes. You think that we was learning from other rappers' mistakes, but we ain't. It's plain to go against. With every artist comes an image he portrays and a picture that he paints. But in the midst of all this anger and this angst, never once did you hear me say I'm a gangster, and I ain't hear no complaints. But I know that I will always continue to grow, long as I lead and never follow no one else's shadow. There will never be another me, and that I can guarantee. That's why the fuck I remain sucker free to this day. The game will never be the same, no matter how much fame or success they attain. There will never be another me, and no matter what they do, there will never be another you. You can search, but you'll never find. You can try to rewind time, but in your hearts and your minds, we will never die. We are forever alive, and we continue growing.
One day at a time.
Don't get caught in the publicity and caught in the hype. Rappers are regular people, minus money and light. Searching for fortune and fame and superstardom. All the jury, all the calls, whose crews are hardest. Not a hip-hop police, surveillance is hot. And the kids think peace is their only option. Outlaws born filthy, guilty as charged. My memories are Gaddafi, my Machiavelli lasagna. You think the industry is fun, ain't no pity with guns. And when your money is up, that's when your enemies come. So if he died and came back, would he try to save rap? We needin' to change, the drama remains.
I spent my whole life, yeah, fighting myself,
that I can't win,
so I'm inviting some help.
Now then.
I take rights from the left, I'm still just like a kid looking for stripes on my belt.
Yeah.
That day is a fight in itself, so I just pray and hope God take the life of myself. No matter how much I try,
stay alive,
I'ma die, man, still standing and in love with my pride.
Frivolous beef, we passed that. I'm trying to keep some income coming in and collect on my ass cap. But rappers in the game ain't changed. And I finally realized that we not in the same game. The hating and nothing, so I guess I deal with it. The 4-5 cop killers, yes, I'm still with it. The streets is military, you gotta be a soldier. Gotta stay leery and keep your eyes on the road as they do what they gotta do. The shackling holders, so we gotta do what we gotta do to keep growing one way at a time. Keep the faith in your mind when we continue growing.
One day at a time.
Damn. People. Glad you catch the binger. Live and direct. Hope y'all doing well out there. Take care. We'll be back sometime next Sunday. We talk about Syria. Ladies and gentlemen, good night.